Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
And with the fifth pick in the draft. Hey, fifth better than seventh, Tony.
We'll find out.
We got that going for us here in Jacksonville.
A few months away.
Happy New Year, Tony Smith.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. Here we go.
Not so happy.
Starting off on a new foot for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
As I tweeted out late during the game yesterday, something that was a topic of conversation all last week, anyone who believes in offseason momentum is freaking out right now.
Right.
I mean,
I told you last week I didn't believe in any of that anyway.
Right, but they played their two worst games of the year.
Right.
The last two weeks.
If you are a believer in, hey, we want to play well because it'll set the tone for the offseason, well, then you, I would assume, believe that the tone has been set in a terrible, terrible way for this offseason.
I can't imagine being Luke Jokel. I really cannot imagine being Luke Jokel and that being the last thing you did in the NFL this year and knowing that you just have to wear that for eight months,
7 months or whatever you want to look at it.
That would be just completely miserable.
Yeah, and look, I mean, we've gotten the constant stream of tweets and emails and texts saying, get rid of Luke Jokel, cut him. I heard what the guy said a few minutes ago. You know, you're not going to – what's your alternative? I'm not opposed to pushing him, bringing a guy. I'm not opposed to drafting his replacement, quite frankly, but – unless you have a roster full of guys that are better or enough guys that are better that, you know, stand out ahead of him at the left tackle position, he may not. He had a horrendous game, the worst of his career that I can recall.
Yeah.
But do you have an upgrade? It's what we've talked about all season long with certain underperforming players. At the Leo spot, what do you do? Try something. Well, no matter who they put in, it didn't work. They know who they feel are the better players. They see him every single day. And I don't doubt that at this point, Luke Jokel's the best alternative they have at left tackle. You don't just get rid of him.
Especially with Parnell out of the game already.
Parnell's out, right. Parnell's out. Sam Young's already playing yesterday. Josh Wells has long since been on IR. There weren't many directions you could turn yesterday. That's not to say it was all Luke Jokel's fault. There's a lot of blame to go around for yesterday's performance. That really not that you could look at Allen Robinson. It's easy to point out there may have been other guys that played well, but they don't put up the same kind of statistical markers that you noticed.
Yeah, I actually thought Devon House played pretty well.
I thought he played okay.
Yeah, I thought
Jonas Gray ran hard.
Yeah, I like what we've seen from Gray in the 2 weeks he's been here, and I hope he gets a shot next year, especially with how disappointing Denard Robinson has been, which goes to the big point coming out of yesterday's game, at least for me, and that's just how awful the 2013 draft class looked in yesterday's game. I mean, Jokel was embarrassing, but only a little bit more embarrassing than Cyprian.
Oh, my goodness.
Was in that game yesterday. I mean, it was awful. Dwayne Grotz couldn't even get on the field until late in the game for this football team because of where his status is with them right now. And Denard Robinson put the ball on the ground.
And then basically didn't play again.
Right.
That blew his opportunity.
For a guy that's been here for 2 weeks.
Four times down the stretch, Denard Robinson had the opportunity to cement himself as a valuable piece of this offense. Now, you can argue the offensive line hasn't opened many holes, but that ball security is a different issue to me.
Yeah, that's not on the line.
Everybody's eventually going to get hit at whatever point the tackle comes at the line of scrimmage in the backfield, 10 yards downfield. You got to wrap up and secure the football. And he's done a poor, poor job of that. I brought that up yesterday on the postgame. The 2013 draft class didn't get the memo that they play 16 games, or maybe they did. It just was awful. I mean, Jonathan Cyprian, what do we always hear? Miscast. If you ever put him in the box and let him play downhill and play to his strength, then you'll see what he's got. Well, Alfred Blue met him in the hole and put him on his back yesterday. I mean, if that's his strength, and I don't doubt that it is because coverage certainly isn't, then Jonathan Cyprian's got some issues, and I think he does have issues. He's been an average player at best for this football team. You're talking about the first two of the first 33 picks in the draft and the first two picks of the Dave Caldwell regime not getting the job done.
No, at least it's – and look, I think the story with Jokel, the fans have been a lot harder on Jokel than the quote-unquote experts have been, you know, Baselli and Lagerman and those types of guys. The fans have been on Jokel basically since last season got started for his performance on the field. And I think it is a little bit unfair to judge Jokel's first 3 years based on the worst day of his career. I do think that's a little bit unfair. That doesn't mean that I think Jokel doesn't deserve to have somebody pushing him for his job at left tackle. It's time for the organization to create competition at the left tackle position. That doesn't mean I'm saying cut Jokel. It means give him somebody that he has to win that job. That he's not the left tackle for the Jaguars next year. He has to earn that, and I think Cyprian's in the same position. It's been long enough. It's 3 years on the field. He hasn't shown the coverage skills that they need out of that position. Right now, with what they have available to them in this defense, they have to adjust somehow. Cyprian's going to have to stay on the field, and he just hasn't been good enough, and maybe that's what Sample's going to be going forward, depending on what they're going to do this offseason, trying to address free safety. But I think it's dangerous territory for a team where there's a lot of fans that are already on the we're done with Gus Bradley train. It's dangerous territory to 3 years into this thing have to be revisiting things you thought you had fixed.
Right.
Via the draft.
Building block pieces.
Right. To go back and say, maybe we do have to address left tackle. Maybe we do have to address strong safety. To already have to be answering those questions. That's why I think it is a bit more Gus and Dave are connected as far as when they're, how long they're going to be here and when they're going to go, if this thing works or doesn't work. I think they're a little bit more connected than other people seem to think, including you.
I don't think they're connected. I think Dave Caldwell will, unless Gus Bradley turns it around in a big way in 2015, Dave Caldwell will be here longer, in my opinion, because when you hit on the quarterback, as a general manager, it's the biggest hit you can have, and it does
no doubt
make up for a lot of other stuff. And I believe he's hit on the quarterback. Quarterback didn't have a good day yesterday either, and we talked about it in the post game. We've talked about it before. Heard the guys talk about it on the drill this morning. It's not our exclusive intellectual property. We get it. He needs to cut down the turnovers. Again, Tony led the league in interceptions. Another pick six yesterday. A horrendous pick six. I mean, Kareem Jackson's squatting on that route the entire way, and I don't know if he's locking in. He's not seeing these guys. He's getting tunnel vision.
It was a lot like the Norman pick six. In that, look, it's a really good player by the defender to come off his guy and come over and make the play. But it also tells you that when they line up in that formation, the Jaguars obviously have a tendency that everybody knows.
Right.
Everybody in the league knows, and the good players in the league are squatting on that outside guy instead of respecting that route to the inside when they run those two slants on one side. At least a couple times a year now, it has completely killed them. And they got to figure out something with that. They got to figure out what they're going to do in the first half of games offensively. As much as we all think the offense has improved, miserable. Miserable in the first half. Miserable on third down this year, offensively and defensively. There are still big, big issues for this team going forward.
All right, we'll talk about a lot of them today. John Osher is going to join us here coming up in a few minutes because the locker room opens up in about an hour today, and you better get in while the getting's good. I have a feeling these guys are going to be in and out as quickly as possible, cleaning out their lockers and such for the off season. So with that, your fan feedback question of the day is this. It asks you, look, I'm not asking for the biggest positive and negative, but a lot of people are taking it that way. You can if you choose to. What I'm asking for is the biggest surprise. In other words, which guy exceeded expectations the most? If you thought a guy was going to be great, and he was, that's not a surprise. But however you want to answer, it's fine. Biggest positive surprise, biggest disappointment for the Jags in 2015, the 2015 season that just wrapped up, at least for them, it wrapped up. 12 teams going on to the postseason this upcoming weekend. So you can share your thoughts with us on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. And, of course, you can text us as well on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line for the first time this year at 641-1010. That's also the phone-in line. If you'd like to get on board, we'll open the phone lines to you. We'll hear from Gus Bradley and Blake Bortles, some post-game reaction to the debacle in Houston from yesterday as the Jags fall hard for their 11th loss of the season now, 12-36 in 3 years under Gus Bradley's helm, or with him at the helm. So any thoughts on Jaguar football? Certainly we welcome you to the first show of the new year here on Jaguars Today. Monday's brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. We'll get your calls and we'll get the Ozone coming up next from Jaguars.com. Senior writer John Osher will join us here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Just looking at one of the responses to the fan feedback question today. Biggest positive surprise for the Jags. Biggest disappointments for the Jags this year. Surprise, Blake Bortles, he's our guy. He's our franchise quarterback, exclamation point. So I'm assuming Blake exceeded his expectations. This is from Miguel on Facebook. Biggest disappointment, Zane Beatles. Not that I thought he was any good, but I didn't think it would be this bad. So even the fact that you came in with a very low expectation, he managed to come in under your expectations, according to Miguel, at least in that score.
Yeah, I got to think about the disappointment side of this thing.
Oh, I do too. I mean,
I'm pretty sure I know who my biggest surprise is, but disappointment, I think, could go the other way. And I think yesterday's game, honestly, may have added another player to the surprise side. When you've watched the last 2 weeks and just how bad the edge of the run game has been without Telvin Smith,
That's a good point.
I mean, it's been really bad. You've watched teams gash the Jags the last couple weeks without Telvin on the field. His speed obviously made up for some other shortcomings that they have on this defense right now.
I've been asked several times on Twitter, am I going to address, or are we going to address, Ryan O'Halloran and Chris Clemens and their Twitter spat? Look, first of all, we can address anything. I'm not afraid to talk about it, but I don't know any particulars. I wasn't in the locker room. Ryan will be in later this week, as he typically is.
If he wants to talk about it, we'll talk about it.
Well, I'm going to bring it up.
Oh, yeah.
Put it that way.
And he can decide to address it or not.
Right. But Chris Clemens wouldn't address it. Chris Clemens, let me just say this. I was told on the first day he signed here, good luck ever getting him to cooperate with you ever. Okay? And that was told to me. I'm not going to tell you who told me that. It's not important, but trust me, it was a person who would have to deal with him on a daily basis, and he's not media friendly. He doesn't have to be. That doesn't make my I haven't colored my interpretation of Chris Clemens' play through that prism. There's plenty of guys to talk to. We get one or two here and there randomly on the show. It's not like we're driven by story. We don't have to write a story on Chris Clemens. We don't have to do a show on Chris Clemens or any other individual player for that matter. There's plenty of info out there. I don't know if Chris Clemens denied what Ryan says he said. I'm sure Ryan, knowing Ryan, I don't think he would make something like that up, but I wasn't there, wasn't a witness to it. Anybody wants to go read their two Twitter feeds, have at it. I don't know what I can add to it. And since we're having Ryan coming in later in the week, and John Osher is going to join us any minute now, I didn't think today was the time to really venture too far into left field. It's not the important thing. It's an interesting thing. There's no question about that. At least to me, it's an interesting thing. But I'm sure to a lot of fans out there, based on the Twitter responses, they feel the same way. Nevertheless, there's really not much I can advance that story today as far as that goes.
No, I'm with you.
Who knows? I have a feeling Johnny O didn't hear the quote either. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I don't know, but he's about to join us here. If you'd like to get in, 641-1010. If you're on the line, we'll get to you coming up here in just a moment as we welcome in the senior writer from Jaguars.com, John Osher, to the program.
How are you?
I said program. I think I
program
channeled every hillbilly who wants to watch SEC football. There you go.
Yeah, you might have.
Not everyone who watches SEC football is a hillbilly, but if you say program, there's a chance. You got a shot. It's ACC as well.
I didn't like watching that program yesterday.
Dabo's a program guy.
It was a bad program yesterday.
That was a turn the channel program, but we couldn't.
Yeah, I couldn't turn the channel.
I'm going to stop saying that word now. I'm going to say program now.
Yeah, that's almost fine. Wanted to encourage people. I was like, you do realize like the Jets and Buffalo and Pittsburgh and Cleveland are playing games with a playoff spot on the line. Like, if you have the ticket, now's the time to get away from this mess.
Yeah, that was the day to use it. Yeah, it was, what do you say to that?
Well, we're going to say a few things to it coming up here in a moment, but let me ask you I'm not trying to put you on the spot here, but I assume you saw the Twitter exchange between Ryan O'Halloran and Chris
Clemens.
I
did.
Did you hear any of that take place?
It happened after I left the locker room.
Then that's
hit the bus.
We don't need to go any further down that road.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm not trying to. I was just wondering if you had been a witness to anything. That's otherwise, there's no sense in talking about Ryan will be in later in the week.
Right.
Chris is welcome to come join us on the program every day.
Yeah, probably won't.
Based on the way it's gone for 2 years, but that's his prerogative.
Yeah, if I knew anything about it, if I had been in, I would certainly comment on what I saw. But I was on the bus getting ready to write, and saw the Twitter exchange. Unfortunate. Don't know how it. Don't know how it grew. Wish I'd seen it.
Look, I personally, like yeah, it was interesting, edgy little stuff. It was something distracting anyway to take your attention away from what went on the field. But let's talk about what went on the field, John. You know, I'm not a believer, and I said it last week, that you win, you could win 59-0 this week. Doesn't mean a thing come next September. So I don't think this necessarily is indicative of how next season is going to go. But as we heard last week, Gus Bradley, hey, we're going to play this one out to win. Now, I'm not saying they didn't play to win, but, you know, I heard comments from guys saying, hey, this is an opportunity for us to show what we're made of. That we're, you know, to me, even hearing that in the pregame, some of the comments we were running made me think, well, no, the opportunity was when the season was still in the balance. You know what I mean? And that now, I mean, you're 5-10. Whatever you do here, even if you did win 42-3, what difference does it make? You're a 6-10 team. That's what you've shown.
Yeah,
to be.
It struck me as I thought about it last night after I was sort of wrapping stuff up that it looked like a team that had played a bunch of close games, had lived on the edge. And then once it was over before New Orleans, a little of the wind went out. And it's not a good enough team to have the wind go out and play well, if that makes any sense. So, you know, that looked like what happened. I don't know if it was some guys who knew they weren't going to be back, you know, not playing as well as they could have. I don't know if it was young guys
I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. Are you saying guys checked out? Do they mail it in?
When you play your worst two games of the season in the last 2 weeks, mail it in strong, because I don't think you look at 53 guys and say, boy, they all did this,
obviously,
all did that. But something sure happened, because it was the two worst games of the year, and there was no frame of reference before that for them not playing – except for New England, but for them not being in games in the fourth quarter. With New Orleans, I thought it was a case of it got going in the wrong direction fast, and they slow started against a fast-starting team. I didn't get near the sense of just not being in it the whole way. They came back in the second half. They showed life, all that. Yesterday, they showed a smidge of it right after the second half, but not enough to be – not enough to say that you saw anything real in that game.
There's so many directions
or
we can go.
Really
here.
Good, I guess you should say.
Well, and we've got the whole offseason to talk about a lot of these things, but while they're fresh in our mind, let's start with Luke Jokel. Worst game of his career. If it's not, I've really blocked out a bad memory. It was a terrible performance for him yesterday, and I think for the most part he had been better. I'm not saying great, but had been better this year as a whole than he had been the first couple of years. But did he regress? I mean, it's not like – look, I understand Watt's good. Merciless is good. They had 6.5 sacks between them. They're not going to average like 80 sacks a year between them. So that is not a typical performance for that defensive line, no matter how good it is.
It's not completely atypical of Watt. He's capable of that sort
of
game.
He's certainly capable
of that. But, again, that's not to say anything about what Luke Jokel did yesterday was good. You know, I haven't had a chance to go back and look at how the Jaguars tried to scheme alongside Luke Jokel. I don't know if they were helping Sam Young and he was getting no help. I don't know that. I'm not saying that's what happened. But you look for reasons why he hasn't played at a Pro Bowl level. And I'm not sure that he's going to. But he hasn't played that poorly. I do think one thing that played into it yesterday, and we've been talking about it a little over the last month, I don't think the Texans had any thought of worrying remotely about a running game yesterday. So as a result, it felt like they were pass rushing on every play. And at some point in this offseason or next season, they've got to be able to have the threat of quick plays, either quick passing plays that take the pressure off the quarterback, dropping with a pass rush in his face, so to speak.
Right.
So you've got to be able to run the ball better than that. They average, what, 3 yards a carry?
Why not throw some screens?
Yeah, something to do that.
And you hear Gus after the game, maybe we should have max protected. That infuriates people. I'll be quite frank with you. Don't tell me now after the game's over. Why don't you do that? Why don't you step in there? I think this is what is one of the things that is very frustrating, Jaguar fans. Okay, don't tell me about this after the fact. Get in Greg Olsen's face and say, enough, I don't care what the game plan was. You're getting our quarterback killed.
Right.
You're going to have to max protect. And it's not like that's a foreign concept. Teams know max protection. It's a different personnel package. Run them out there. You've got plays that you know you can run out of every package out there. You got to do something different. I don't want to hear about hindsight. That's me, too. That's one of my frustrations. But I'm sure, because I've heard it from fans, I know it's a big frustration for them.
And I don't want to say the stuff about not being able to run and have it sound like a defense of Luke Jokel. He knew yesterday, I heard Tony on the way in, boy, you don't want to go into that offseason with that feeling. You know, when a player says he's sick to his stomach, which he said a couple of times yesterday, he knew. And credit to him, he owned it. He talked about it. Didn't make the play any better. But, yeah, he's got a bad feeling going into the offseason. But I do think there is certainly a glaring thing. This team wanted to be a running team coming into the season. By the end of the season, it was anything but, and I certainly think that contributed to the 8 sacks. When you let the Texans with J.J. Watt know that you don't have to respect the running game at all, and then you are dropping deep and you are on third and whatever all the time, pass protection is going to be a lot more difficult.
No, I understand that, but that's, and I get Parnell and Linder. I mean, Linder's been gone for a while now, and but that's life in the NFL, man.
Sure.
You got to play without guys and carry on. You know, somebody pointed out yesterday, you know, everyone's talking about, hey, Dante Fowler, if he turns into the guy next year that's going to be a big boost for the Jags, what about Jadeveon Clowney, who's barely played for the Texans? They're feeling the same way.
Right.
That's a former number one overall pick right there.
Yeah, you're sort of getting to the point with him where you wonder.
Well, you don't know. I mean, there's at least he's shown a flash here or there. Can he stay healthy? I don't know.
Well, the good news is I'm not sure he can play better than Merciless did yesterday.
No, right. I guess that's the good news, right? It's not going to be an upgrade, right? But, the point being that everyone else is not standing still while your young team is racing to maturity.
Yeah, I think right now what you're looking for is some reason to think that the pass rush – you want to know what you have in your building. And I think Fowler and Marks especially – you've got pieces in your building that you would expect to at least be able to get you out of this deficient level in the pass rush. Now, if they get back, does that make you great pass rush? No. So you've still got to address those areas. But if you're looking for reasons why it was absolutely deficient this year, then I think you can look at Fowler and Marks.
All right, let's get a couple calls in on this side of the break with John Osier here on Jaguars Today, brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. Let's start this morning at 641-1010 with Desmond on the south side. Desmond, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are y'all?
Good, thanks.
Okay, last week I was biased about the Gus Bradley. I was real excited about Gus Bradley coming back. But I've seen yesterday, man, I'm really kind of like I'm scratching my head and trying to see if it's the right move or what, because I don't see no fight out of the team. Well, there is fight, they're playing, but I don't see, as people like they say yesterday, Buffalo Bills, they ain't have nothing to play for, but they out there scrambling, fighting, you know, clawing everything, trying to mess up playoff holes like they did yesterday. And I would like to say, man, Luke Jokel, man, he has to go. He has to go. It's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. At least, like y'all say, brand competition. Then Bob Babbage, why every time we in a third and long situation, why do you back up the defenders 15 to 10 yards and you see it's not working? It didn't work in San Diego or against San Diego. Why are you still doing the same thing? And, I mean, my goodness, man, we need to get better, man. I mean, I'm glad we have this offseason so we can – I feel as that we need to get Jalen Ramsey if that be part. We can go anywhere in the draft, really, but – we need help, man. I like to stick out comments and statements off the air, man.
All right. Thank you, Desmond. One thing I'll say, and I'm not trying to pick on you, but you said Luke Jokel's got to go. No ifs, ands, or buts. or at least bring in competition. Those are two completely either have to go no ifs, ands, or buts, or you don't have to go no ifs, ands, or buts. And I don't. There's no way Luke Jokel's not coming back on the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're not just going to cast him aside. But I do think, John, I'd like to see at least that they should have it be, as Tony said, you're not the left tackle. You're competing to play left tackle for the Jacksonville Jaguars. You can talk about everybody's going to compete for their job every day. BS. Blake Bortles doesn't have to compete for the quarterback job. He's the quarterback of the team. Allen Robinson doesn't need to compete to be a starting wide receiver. He's a starting wide receiver. Now, you have to maintain a certain level of play to hold on to that spot. But guys will walk in the door next year as presumptive starters. And he may get the first reps, but I would not consider him my starting left tackle until he shows me he can beat out whatever I bring in to push him.
Yeah, I don't know how much you're going to spend or draft in order to make that realistic, I guess is my point.
Okay, Josh Wells, welcome back. Yeah, you got an equal shot to win this job.
I think that makes sense. If that's what you're talking about, that makes sense. I don't know realistically if I can sit here and say they're going to go, you know, if you're going to bring in a guy that people publicly think, hey, he's going to push Luke Jokel. I don't think most fans sit there and go, hey, Josh Wells is going to push Luke Jokel. That's not going to excite people, if you will. So I don't think you're going to get a big offseason move.
Put it this way. Would you, with the fifth pick in the draft, right,
I would not take a left tackle.
You would not?
No.
Even if it's the guy that they think is the best graded player on the board. If Joey Bosa's gone and there's no pass rusher worth the pick, you wouldn't take a left tackle?
No.
Oh, I would. If I thought that guy was an upgrade over what I have, it's such an important position, I'd take him in a second.
I'm not going to neglect the defense top 10 of the draft.
Okay, that's great.
If there's no defensive player available at all, if the left tackle is the only guy, maybe, but no.
I don't think you're necessarily neglecting the defense. I mean, you're neglecting your quarterback if you don't protect the guy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, that's as important as anything.
I guess I just don't have that much faith that you're going to go out and get significantly better doing that. You know, I haven't seen a whole lot of – I'm not sure it's a top 10 – draft position right now, I guess,
for this team or
overall.
Well, I'm not overall in the
left tackle
for the NFL. You mean this
year? Not as much as it was.
Wow, really?
Not as much as it used to be. Now, I think
since this past April. I mean, it's always been. When has it not been a premium position in the last 20 years?
It's. Because the level of play, the college, it's not producing it the way it used to. It's not. I'm not saying it's not important. It's obviously an important position, but it's not what it was 15 years ago. The quality coming out.
But that's a different story, the quality. I'm talking about the importance of the position.
Yeah, it's important. But do you force making it important by taking it?
No, I'm saying if Laramie Tunsil's sitting there at number 5, I'm thinking long and hard about welcoming a
which
left
he probably
tackle
won't be.
Right, but
the odds of him with the guys that are the four teams that are picking ahead of him dropping there.
But if Tennessee trades
low
down to a team that wants a quarterback, Cleveland takes a quarterback at 2. That's two quarterbacks off the board right there, right in front of you. Don't know. I mean, doesn't mean that he's not gone. But then all of a sudden you're starting to narrow the list of players because you don't want a quarterback. Joey Bosa, please make it to number 5. Don't think he will.
Looking around at how those guys play right now, it's a harder sell for me to take it in the top 10 than it used to be. Just overall, the
position. If Tony Boselli were in the draft, though, I mean, like, it's you're
those
talking
guys
about
aren't
because,
there anymore.
But you're saying because but every year there's somebody. I mean, I'm not saying every single year, but that doesn't mean there's never going to be a great left tackle again. You think there's never going to be a great left tackle again? What positions are worth a top 10 pick then?
Pass rusher, quarterback. I still like wide receiver there if he's absolutely elite. But left tackle is a tougher sell than
wide,
he used to be.
Wide receiver, you find guys all throughout the draft that can make an impact at wide receiver. I there's no way I see taking a wide receiver in the top 10 overtaking a left tackle. Period. I mean, I'm not saying that wide receivers aren't ever worthy of going in the top 10, but Allen Robinson's a late second-round pick, 1,400 yards, man. You find those guys. Antonio Brown was, like a fourth-round pick. You find these guys all over the place.
I'm not saying you never do it, but 15 years ago, it was perceived as a dead solid lock that if a guy came out at that position, he was going to be rock solid and really good. And anymore, it's just not the case.
Well, that's on evaluation then. That's on the players. I mean, there's no guarantee that a wide receiver is going to be any good when you take him in the top 10. Anyway, we've got a break. We'll come back. Phone lines are loaded. We'll get to more of you coming up on the other side. With John Osier and Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Happy New Year from Jaguars today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
A little double dose of Oh for you right there. John Osher's here. You can read him daily at Jaguars.com.
Did I say yesterday right during the second half, Mike?
What's that?
No. It was... What do you say? I mean, I don't think as we get away from that final game, I don't think that will be necessarily the overriding feel from the season, but it is sure a tough swallow right now.
That's fine. I mean, look, I'm not saying it's not all about one game.
No,
they did some positive things, but the bottom line, they're 5-11,
yep.
John, which is one game better than Gus Bradley's first year. And you talk about how it's different. Well, it's not. I'm sorry, it's not. To me, it's not. You're one game better in the standings than you were.
Right.
You're two games better than last year when you went backwards. You've won 12 games. You averaged 4 wins in 3 years. That's
not good.
Shad Khan, man, Gus should be writing Christmas cards on a daily basis to Shad Khan. Honestly, I mean, just I can't imagine.
They would be Christmas cards, and they'd just be cards.
Write them anything you like.
364 of them.
Could be still Christmas cards. If you want to, it's sending them early. You don't always send Christmas cards on Christmas Day. All right, moving on. 641-1010. Lucas in Gainesville, you're next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Lucas.
Hey, guys. You know, I know a lot of people have a lot of negative things to say about this season, but I can say that most Jaguar seasons, it's kind of like Sisyphus, you know, it's a repeating pattern to where about week 8, I'm looking at the mock drafts, I'm on, you know, all the websites and everything, and I've basically just given up on the season. And I've got to say that this season, it took me until week 17. So I think that's a progression.
Why is that, though? I'm just curious, why do you think that was different this year? Was it because they were in – well, yeah, but they were still in the mix because it was a historically bad year in the division. I mean, would you think, put it this way, if you had a team, let's say the Colts were the same team they were for the last 3 years, and they were going 11-5, and they had the division wrapped up 3 weeks ago. So you're saying basically once the – I'm not critiquing. I'm just trying to understand why it took that long for you to change it. It was because they, regardless of the record, they were still in playoff contention is what you're saying.
Right, and that's all that really matters. You know, if you get into the playoffs, you have a chance. While we're talking about the draft, though, I know a lot of people want Ramsey and or Bosa, but I just want to say, as someone who's been living in Gainesville, not a big fan of Hargraves, and a lot of people think a lot of people like Tabor better. So I hope we don't get Hargraves. I'll take your comments on that off the air.
All right, thank you, Lucas. I mean, I don't watch Vernon Hargraves week in, week out. He's been a guy that a lot of people have projected to the Jags because they were picking around 10 or 12 in a lot of mock drafts.
Yeah, right now he's maybe he's one of the top handful of corners, if not the top corner, according to the consensus right now, is Vernon Hargraves. Who knows how much that's going to change? I mean, DeMontre Moore was a guy that we saw mocked as the number one pick in the draft a couple years ago, and then
went in the fourth round.
Right, he goes in the fourth round. So you don't know how the evaluation of these guys is going to play out over the course of the next couple months, but Ramsey is a popular pick because they're so desperate to find somebody that can play that free safety position, and it looks
like the entire league is.
Right, and Ramsey looks like a guy who may be able to do that at a high level coming into the league, and for a team that desperately has been trying to find that, it makes a lot of sense.
I'll say this. You would find a lot of mock drafts prior to yesterday that had Baltimore taking him, and because San Francisco won, thanks, Blaine, it created a three-way tie, and despite the fact that the Jags beat Baltimore and they're tied with them, they actually pick ahead of them because of the three-way tie-break dynamics.
Yeah, it goes into record of
top
opponents.
Yeah. Right.
Something I think it's overall like strength of schedule.
Whatever the tiebreaker is.
Yeah.
In a three-way tiebreak,
we win.
The Jags pick fifth.
Yeah, and that's...
could be significant.
Now that's played out. You know, I don't think they're going to go corner at number five.
I don't either.
But at this point, you know, you really, more than anything else in this defense, outside of Telvin Smith, you need players who can run and make an impact. And, you know, I haven't looked at the draft enough to know if, you know, player A's player better than player B or fits that enough. I'll start doing that at the Senior Bowl a lot. But that's what you need regardless of position.
All right, let's go back to the phone. Steve is next on the north side. Good morning, Steve. How are you? What's up?
I'm going to make one quick note. Really, Gus only won four games if the referees win the botch the Baltimore game. But we get the fifth game. I'll take that. But like you guys were saying, how after games he'll say, oh, we should have did this, we should have did that. I've been pointing that out all season. I remember in the Patriots game at halftime, after that game, Gus said he got discouraged at halftime because Bortles threw the pick. And that bothered me because you told me you got discouraged at halftime. And at that game, you had Brian Walters. He caught like two passes. Brian Walters is your fourth, fifth string receiver. Caught two passes for 30-something yards. I felt like even though that's a little bit, but you should be able to take that and be like, okay, fourth, fifth string receiver did a little something. Let's try to find a way to bounce back and shake that. And ever since then, I just have this thought, well, how many other games do you get discouraged in at halftime? Because you have a slow start, but just the last season and the year before, you was having quick starts. But when you get to the second half, when you get after halftime, you just completely done. So I feel like there's no progression. You just flip-flop. And fans is like, okay, well, at least we competed in the second half. But you traded out for the other half. You're still not playing four quarters of football. So it's nothing different, in my opinion. There's nothing different.
All right, Steve, go ahead. Let me jump in here because I think we got your point. And they haven't become a team that consistently plays a good four quarters. There's no question about that. And I understand his point. He's saying he felt like in the past they'd be more competitive in the first half and just couldn't hold on and didn't have enough and then fall apart. The second half, it's almost like the opposite. I could see some of that this year, you know, slow starts and then coming on in the second half and making it a ball game or maybe coming back and winning. You know, as far as the comment about being discouraged, I don't remember it specifically, so I don't want to react to it out of context. It could have been a one-off kind of thing against a team that was beating you pretty badly as the defending Super Bowl champs. I don't recall the comment.
I think a lot of times people really pick apart what Gus says in the postgame, and I get it because it's streaming live. They can watch it. But I think there are times where Gus tries – to really give a lot of insight into what he's thinking during the game, more than a lot of coaches would. And when he says something like, I was discouraged here, I don't know if that's the overriding theme of what he was saying or if it defines his approach to a game. But, you know, it's people are going to pick it apart.
And that's fine. And, I mean, I don't recall
and they
that
should. It's what they have to
comment.
Go on. So.
Right, and that's fine if you do. Thanks for stating your case there. Let's go back to the phones. James in Gainesville is up next this morning. Good morning, James. How are you?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Good.
Okay, this is my question. Well, not really a question. This is what I'm dealing with. I've been a season ticket holder for 15 years now, and I'm an avid Jag fan. I would like to continue investing money in this team. Give me three good reasons why I should.
Not my job. It's not my job to convince you to buy season tickets, and I'm not going to play that role. It's not my job. My job is to critique the team as I see fit, and I buy season tickets. I'm going to buy them next year simply because I want to support the team. They give me a lot. They enrich my life, and I honestly want to give back. I don't need them. I come to the games anyway, and I end up giving them away every week. But so that's me. If that's not you, that's up to you. I mean, you found reasons for 15 years to do it. If you don't want to, I'm not going to sit here and try to convince you otherwise. I mean, I want the Jags to be an economically viable franchise. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I want them to sell out. I want them to be, you know, have a season ticket waiting list. But it's not my job to individually convince you why you should. I don't work for the Jaguars. I work with the Jaguars, and I comment on the Jaguars. But it's not my job to sell tickets for the Jags. I want them to sell their tickets. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. But at the same time, I feel like I have to maintain the ability to tell you when I think things are absolutely horrible, and that's not a very good, you know, something that's going to really stir the season ticket market. Right. You know what I mean? So I don't feel like that's
Yeah, I do work for the Jaguars, but on a Monday after 30-6, you know, I can't tell you why to buy season tickets, but
oh, I can list a bunch of reasons. Yeah. I'm sure we all could, right? Hey, you're excited about Blake Bortles' new young franchise. Got a great game day experience. You love the team. You love the camaraderie. You love the people you hang out with. The you know the fan experience. All those things. There are a million reasons why you could buy season tickets. I'm not going to tell you you should. That's your prerogative, man. Right. I mean, if that's the way you feel, I have a feeling after 15 years, you're probably going to be back next year because you've hung in there this long and. You know, you're that. Right. That's my guess. And but if you don't, that's I'm not going to make say that makes you a bad person or
there,
fan.
If there's an underlying thing there that the franchise doesn't understand that sort of frustration, I don't think that's true. I mean, it's very clear around here when you talk to Mark Lamping, Dave Caldwell, Shad Khan, whoever, you know, they know that they have to perform on the field to earn people's trust, and that's their goal. There's not a lack of knowledge about that need. It's just, you know, it's not happening on the field yet, and they believe that their process is working toward that. So you can argue whether that's happening or not, but don't think that they don't know that or they don't understand it.
All right, locker room's going to open up in a few minutes. What are the stories you're looking to follow up on or hear about, or what final thoughts from which players? What are you interested in getting out of
this? Getaway days, so you want to sort of capture that and you know, find out from guys like Blake Bortles, Marquise Lee, Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, guys like that, what they're doing in the offseason, what the initial plans are. It's a tough day. You know, as guys throwing shoes in the trash can, getting ready to head out the door, and it happens every season. There's only one team happy.
I got a fiver in my pocket, burning the hole in it, for a photo of O'Halloran and Clemens hugging it out in the locker room.
You got to hug it out in this world, Mike.
You got to hug it out. So I got a fiver if you come up with the photographic evidence.
I'm not sure I'll earn that five.
Well, it's an incentive. It's out there for you.
I'll try.
All right, we'll see how hard you want to work here on the first Monday of the new year.
I think you can probably get that.
Johnny O, we'll talk to you later in the week, buddy.
Look forward to it. See you guys.
There he goes. John Osher, Jaguars.com. You can read him on a daily basis there, the senior writer for Jaguars.com. Coming back, this Dayton football and the Honda Drive around the NFL. It's a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday on Jaguars. Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history presented this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. On this date in NFL history, 1970, they picked this day to play the conference championship games. Kansas City defeated the Oakland Raiders 17-7 in the AFC tilt. Minnesota beat the Cleveland Browns 27-7 in the NFC championship game. So the Browns were still good as recently as 1970. The USFL held its first ever players draft in the state. Actually, they held their first two players drafts in consecutive years on the same date, Tony. Any guess as to who in 1983 was the first player selected in the USFL draft?
Herschel Walker.
Dan Marino is who it was. Dan Marino obviously went to play in the National Football League. What a weird system, right? You pick a guy who may never come play for you. Tim Spencer, the running back for Ohio State, was second. He did go play in the USFL. Reggie Collier as well from Southern Mississippi. Craig James, how about this? Craig James went fourth to Washington. Gary Anderson, the running back from Arkansas, went fifth, and he went on to play. I think he ended up playing for the Tampa Bay Bandits. I know he played for the Bucks later on. He was drafted by the New Jersey Generals. But Eric Dickerson went sixth. Craig James went two picks before Eric Dickerson? What in the world? What SMU film were they watching? I don't get that. Irv Eatman, Demetrius Johnson, David Greenwood, Tremaine Johnson, and Jimbo Covert. I skipped Billy Ray Smith in there as well. Those were your first 12 draft picks in the United States Football League back in 1983. 1985, the Cowboys played at the time their record 36th postseason game, but Eric Dickerson, speaking of him, stole the spotlight rushing for a playoff record 248 yards and two touchdowns, leading the Rams to a 20-0 victory over Dallas. Famous birthdays for this date: Don Shula, the winningest NFL coach in history. He was born in this date in 1930. Garrison Hurst, former Georgia Bulldog and a four-time 1,000-yard rusher in the league, was born in this date in 1971, turns 45. And happy birthday, Eric Weddle. Maybe hop on Twitter and send Eric Weddle a birthday greeting from the 904 area code. He turns 31 years old today. Not too old for me, Tony. I understand what you're saying. Didn't have a great year. Did age and injury catch up? He certainly had a tremendous year last year. I prefer Eric Berry anyway on the free agent market when it comes to safeties, but
he's a strong safety.
Well, I take that
would
both.
I'm fine with bringing in a strong safety, but that free safety would still be an issue with Berry here.
Eric Berry has played both in Kansas City at times, and I would take Eric Berry in a heartbeat because he's a playmaker, period. But Eric Weddle, not too old for my taste when it comes to the free agency market. This state in football presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Oh, the mock drafts are everywhere. The day after the season ends, it's just about that silly season time. The drive around the NFL, Black Monday today. Let's take a look at some of the coaching vacancies that are already available around the league, as well as some of the rumors surrounding some other jobs. Philadelphia obviously let go of Chip Kelly last week. Cleveland, Mike Pettine and Ray Farmer, their general manager, have both been fired. San Francisco, Jim Tomsula let go after just 1 year, reportedly. Chip Kelly's people have already reached out to the 49ers about that vacancy. Miami, Dan Campbell, he is being interviewed for the job. Mike Shanahan is already in for a second interview with the Dolphins, reportedly. Indianapolis, no one knows what the status of Chuck Pagano is yet. There has been no official word from the Indianapolis Colts. In New Orleans, Sean Payton, he has a meeting today to discuss his future. Most likely outcome that everyone expects is that Peyton's side is going to be given permission to seek a trade for his service as a head coach. If the Saints hear a deal that they like, he is expected to be gone. From New Orleans, New York, Tom Coughlin reportedly considering retiring at some point this week, though we'll see how that works out when everything is said and done. And in Tennessee, Mike Mularkey, the interim head coach, reportedly being given strong consideration about keeping him there in Tennessee. Tom Brady had an MRI on his ankle after being seen limping around the Patriots locker room yesterday after a big shot he took from Ndamukong Suh. The MRI reportedly showed an ankle sprain, but no breaks, so Tom Brady expected to be fine. The Patriots are the 2 seed in the AFC playoffs.
Yeah, it's the Tom Coughlin story is very interesting because the reporting was all over the place yesterday. He's going to walk off into the sunset. Then there was others saying, well, he's just not going to walk away. He's not going to let him fire him and with money still on his contract, and that he may force a decision by the Giants, and the Giants themselves may be split on whether or not to retain Tom Coughlin. So last night, the speculation was he may be back for another season. Nobody knows.
No one knows.
Bottom line. But the reporting's been kind of all over the place. The Johnny Manziel thing is getting, I mean, a lot of people are beyond irritated with it, but it's getting irritating from the standpoint now that it appears that he is trying to force his way out of Cleveland. If you believe everything that's being said, he basically went AWOL on the team. By the way, Peter King, who never, I'm trying to figure out the right way to word this. Peter King is the kind of guy that doesn't go off with half-cocked conspiracy theories all too often, right? He's pretty much a straight down the line guy. You may like him, you may not like him. You may feel he carries the NFL's water on stories. So be it. When Peter King puts in his Monday Morning Quarterback column that he's not convinced that the concussion cover story was real last week, that they were using it as a convenient excuse basically to shut down Manziel in Week 17, there's probably legs to that, is my guess, and that he doesn't have enough sourcing to go on the record saying that the Cleveland Browns made that up, because that is a pretty serious accusation. That's a number of ways run afoul of the National Football League if you do that as a franchise by tampering with the injury report, especially with the concussion issue. But Johnny Manziel reportedly in Vegas, although the team was asked about it, they say they don't know where he was on Saturday night. They know he wasn't in the facility yesterday morning, which the Browns require guys who are in the concussion protocol to show up at 9 a.m. on game day to get checked out whether they're playing or not. And then, Tony, there was a report that came out that said that Manziel showed up basically drunk as a skunk to the facility last week, which either Johnny is really out of control in his life and he needs some kind of serious intervention because he's, you know, just doing self-destructive things at this point, or he's doing them purposely because he knows that if the Browns release him, that Jerry Jones is sitting there in Dallas waiting to scoop him up, and that he can go sit behind Romo for a year or however long it'll be and hang out with his boys down in Texas, and everything's going to be all right with the world. And for him, if this is in fact the case, it just seems more and more like he's going to get what he wants out of this, because who's going to give the Browns anything for Johnny Manziel?
Nobody.
Right? So you're going to take on that contract and that burden of dealing with him and giving up anything of substance. It's one thing to bring the guy in strings unattached as a free agent off the waiver wire. That's a different story. And even then, Peter King suggested that 25 teams, or, you know, he would estimate right now, would consider him untouchable even in that scenario. Wouldn't even claim him off the waiver wire. It may be more than that, but there's always a quarterback-hungry team. But I'd hate to see him end up where he wanted to, because he basically is acting like an ass, right? I mean, the Cleveland Browns, you can say, well, if you don't have use for him, cut him loose. Well, they wasted the 16th pick in the draft, you know. And, yes, it's their fault that they took him, but it's his responsibility to at least try to be the best quarterback he can be for the Cleveland Browns, and they're getting royally hosed in this. I could, you know, I don't have any love lost for Cleveland one way or the other. It's not my concern whether the Browns get dumped on or not, but it just seems patently unfair if Johnny Manziel ends up in Dallas in any capacity.
Yeah, but, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that somebody got their way, right?
Oh, I'm not saying it would be.
With where they wound up.
But this is the one that's in our face at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's the league is littered with guys who get their way. Johnny Manziel, I don't know what he's doing, you know, and it's hard to tell if he is just trying to get himself purposely thrown out of Cleveland so that he can wind up in Dallas. I don't know what Johnny Manziel is doing. I don't think that his skill set right now is going to translate to the league, and it does feel like a guy who's out of control. A guy who goes to rehab earlier this year and then gets pulled over for DUI. A guy who, it's just everything points to this guy just not being in control of the things that he needs to be if he's going to be a successful professional at the NFL level with the way the league is going right now. They care about that off-field stuff in the National Football League right now, at least to some degree, maybe not in Dallas as much as other places, but they care about that in the NFL right now, and Johnny Manziel is just living an out-of-control lifestyle, and Cleveland is paying the price for it. And it's funny because Cleveland, the day after that draft, you remember, Cleveland was rejoicing the day after that first round.
Sure
of that
they were.
They were so thrilled with what they had been able to get done in the first round of that draft, and look at it now. I mean, it's just a couple years later, and look at it now.
Justin Gilbert's as big a bust as Manziel is.
Yeah.
I, at least Manziel has shown flashes of being a good player at times. Gilbert's never done any of that. All right, we got to take a timeout. If you're on the line, stay there. We'll get more calls coming up. We'll also hear from Gus Bradley and Blake Bortles in the next segment as well on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
They're disruptive, and they did a nice job with some of their things up front, and you know, they try to get one-on-one matchups. Even when we tried to max protect or try to chip off the edge, they did some things that, you know, try to force some one-on-ones, especially when we were down and we had to, you know, try to get some longer throws in. So, you know, give them credit.
Yeah, give them credit. It's what you're supposed to do. Come up and create some opportunities to give yourself an advantage in a football game. Jags didn't do enough of that.
They certainly did that.
They did that.
Jacksonville couldn't run the ball. Houston took full advantage of that, whether they were blitzing. It felt like later in the game they stopped blitzing as much, and they just figured, JJ's going to get home. You know, what's the point of blitzing at this point? We know JJ's going to get home.
Tony, what's going to fix a running game? Is the return of Brandon Linder alone going to fix this running game? Because as I recall, I didn't think they were exactly running it down people's throats when he was healthy this year.
Well, I expect that there's going to be a change at center. I don't know if Wisniewski's going to be back, but I expect that Bowenko or whatever they're going to do in free agency, Alex Mack, I expect a change at center. I expect a change at left guard. I think AJ can, or Shatley, somebody else is going to wind up playing left guard. And I think maybe the combination of the interior of that line with Linder coming back, maybe the center changing, and Canner Shatley playing left guard should have an impact on the running game.
I guess I would ask if it ends up being an in-house replacement for Wisniewski, is that an upgrade?
I don't know.
Because otherwise, if it is, why weren't those guys playing ahead of him?
I don't know, but I feel like regardless, there's probably an upgrade based on what they were doing at the end of the season coming at both guard positions.
I don't think
at the beginning of next season.
Yeah, I don't think anybody did enough in the run game this year. You can't, I mean, maybe one or two guys graded out okay, but I don't seem to, for me, and maybe it's because I don't focus in on the offensive line down in, down out. I don't know if Wisniewski was all that terrible this year. I don't think, again, anybody was great in the running game, but I don't think he was the main culprit, let's put it that way. But I agree with you. I mean, his contract is up, so whether or not they elect to try to bring him back, whether they go after Alex Mack if he does opt out, which would be a great option, I think. You know, I don't care how old he is, if he can still play right now. You know, had somebody suggest earlier, Joe Thomas. He seems to maybe want out of Cleveland. Now, he's not too old for me if he could still play ball.
No.
At that kind of level. All right, we'll hear more from Gus coming up here in a moment along with Blake Bortles, but let's get a couple of calls in who've been hanging on. Still have Maurice in Germany, Tyler. Let's get to him. Maurice, thanks for hanging on all the way from Germany. How are you?
I'm doing all right, fellas. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thanks. And it's no worries, man. You know, dedicated Jags fan like everybody else, man. So,
hey, let me ask you, are you U.S. military stationed over there? What are you doing over there?
No, I play basketball over here professionally. I've been over here for about 3 years now, going on four. So,
gotcha.
Yeah, I've been out here for a couple years.
Okay, what can we do for you this morning?
Okay, so my question is, it's about the off season. And before I ask the question, I just want to know if you guys knew off the top of your head how much cap space we have going into the year. I mean, all the cuts.
Like right now, I mean, I think they're projecting tons of cap space, tons of cap space. The exact figure, I think, right now is over $40 million. But Chris Clemens, if they release him, could clear up like another four. I think Zane Beatles could clear up a bunch if they were to release him. I'm not saying all those things would happen, but they have all the cap space they need. So continue on.
Okay, so, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Okay, so my guess is over $50 million. That was what we had around last year, and plus I think the TV deals kick in or something like that. So I would say, in my opinion, for the offseason, like just like you guys were talking about, Alex Mack to me is – Wisniewski's not bad to me, but he doesn't generate that much power, you know, and obviously the long snap issues are an issue. I would think Alex Mack would be a huge upgrade. I think he's worth the money. I think Beatles is definitely a guy we should move on from and save that. You know, I think we would save $5 million if we cut him. A.J. Cann has really produced. I think he could play either guard spot. And then I think the strength of our offensive line is obviously the right side with Linder and Parnell there. And then with the all season, I think the targets outside of Mack we should go after are Tayshawn Gibson. If we don't get – I mean, obviously we'll know what we're going to do before the draft. But Tayshawn Gibson from Cleveland and Oliver Vernon from Miami, you know, we just like you said, we have the cap space. This is a make-or-break year for Bradley and Caldwell. We got to go big, man. And in the draft, I think Jalen Ramsey makes all the sense in the world. And in the second, third round, he's got to go pass rusher. I don't know if you guys heard about this kid, Noah Spence, out of Eastern Kentucky. He's had some issues similar to Justin Blackman, but just because Justin Blackman had his issues doesn't mean this kid will too. I think he could be a sleeper in the mid rounds as another pass rusher. So that's why I can't go.
All right. I'm sorry, Maurice. Finish your thought. I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No worries. I just wanted to say that's where I think we should go overall. I mean, obviously, we need more depth at linebacker. We need more depth at corner, you know, at D tackle, you know, maybe a speedier linebacker. You know, we got to get faster. And I think people are a little bit too hard on Cyprian. I think Cyprian should be better. I think Joko should be better. But let's be honest, how many times can you say in the league you have a serviceable left tackle to protect someone's blind side? And then Cyprian, I think he will be better with a really good free safety, like a kid like Jalen Ramsey. He'll take the pressure off of him, and he'll become a better box safety, which I really think he's best suited at.
All right, thank you, Maurice. I'll say this. He had an opportunity to be a box safety when he met Alfred Blue in the hole and got run over. I mean, just got obliterated.
And Noah Spence is a guy who started his career at Ohio State because of some off-field issues.
Yeah.
He wound up at Eastern Kentucky this year. I think if you look at most mock drafts, at least this early on, they still have Spence as kind of a bottom end of the first round guy right now because he is that kind of talent. He's like 6'3", 260, something like that. So Spence is a guy that right now is being projected basically in that bottom third of the first round of the draft right now. So certainly he could be a guy that would be under consideration for the Jags if he fell into the top of the second round.
Yeah, Jalen Ramsey's the name you're going to hear a lot discussed, and I think, you know, certainly it should be on the short list of candidates. You know, I was making the point earlier about left tackle at that spot. I'm not locked into drafting left tackle. I'm just saying I'm open to creating competition for that position. And I'm open to, if you felt like you're getting a true franchise caliber potential top 10 left tackle, because I don't think Luke Jokel's that. I don't think he has that potential. I think he could be
serviceable.
Right, serviceable at best. Right. That's what he's shown us after 3 years now. Do guys get dramatically better on the offensive line after their third year? I don't know that many of them do.
It's a homework project, but something maybe we take a look at over the course of this week and the next several weeks, especially talking about Jokel and getting ready for the draft and what the Jags may be doing in this offseason and the idea of trying to create competition at left tackle. But just when you look at the left tackles in the league right now, where were they drafted? Where are these guys coming from? Because it feels like a ton of them are first-round guys. And that's kind of there's a lot of teams throwing darts at left tackle in the first round because of how important the position is, and I think a lot of teams are feeling like the Jaguars are right now. Hey, we could upgrade the left tackle position. It's difficult to do. So I'd be curious to see where the left tackles in the league are coming from, especially the upper echelon guys. I know, like, Whitworth in Cincinnati was a second-round pick. I'm curious how many of those guys that are playing at that kind of level are outside of the top 10 in the NFL draft.
And that may be the case, but I would imagine you could probably find that at a lot of positions. You know what I mean? I mean, there are guys that hit in the top 10, and there are guys that hit from every other corner of the draft as well. And I think that's true of a lot of positions. And I don't think it's an easy transition the way they're playing a lot of college ball to the NFL. My point is, if you have a guy, I'm not saying you draft one just to draft one, but if there is a guy, if you feel like Laremy Tunsil is that guy, and he's available to you, I'm okay with you taking him. That's my point about it. I'm not saying it's more important than pass rush or anything else, but there may not be a pass rusher worthy of that selection, at least in Dave Caldwell's eyes. Remember last year, Tony, he told us part of the reason they took Fowler and wanted to go with the pass rushers because looking ahead to this year, they felt one guy carried a first-round grade, not a top-five grade, a first-round grade. I'm guessing that's Joey Bosa out of Ohio State, and I'm guessing that he's gone by the time the fifth pick rolls around in this year's NFL draft. Let's go to Christoph. They're all coming in from Europe right now. What's up, Christoph? How are you?
I'm good, guys. Yourself?
Good, thanks. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. I was just wondering, obviously with us unfortunately getting a top five draft pick this year, is what's the likelihood of the Jaguars coaching staff coaching the Senior Bowl this year? And I'll take the answer off the air.
I really don't know. I saw something about that yesterday as I was reading a bunch of stuff after the
Dallas
game.
Dallas and somebody else would have to turn it down?
Yeah, there would have
assuming they don't have a change.
That would turn it down, right. You can't do it if you have a new coach, right?
Yeah, it has to be at least a second-year staff.
Right.
So I think Dallas and I can't remember the other team that would have to turn it down.
The Chargers, well, right?
Maybe San Diego.
What if Mularkey's back in Tennessee? Would he qualify?
No.
Why?
Because that's a change at head coach this year. I think it has to be.
You have to have been there for a full year?
I think so.
Okay, because, yeah. I mean, they would be retaining Mularkey, I guess. But anyway, whatever the case may be, Christoph, we'll look into it a little bit deeper. But you know,
I hate that they're in the position that they may have the opportunity to do that again. If they did it again, I'm fine with it.
Oh, me too. Oh, absolutely. Why wouldn't you be, right? To get a more up-close look at some of those prospects?
Really, three straight years of this.
Don't get me wrong, Tony. I'm not happy that they earned the right to pick in the top five. Now that the season's over, I'm glad they're picking in the top five. You know what I mean? I mean, look, I don't like the fact that you have to be bad to get that top five pick, but now that the season's over with, I'd rather have putting aside how it was earned, I'd rather have that top five pick and have a chance to get a difference maker. Think about it. If if Tennessee trades down to a team that wants a quarterback and they jump up from, let's say, 6 or 7, I may not be talking about the exact right teams, but let's say somebody jumps up and takes a quarterback at number one, and then Cleveland goes quarterback at number two. So two quarterbacks, first two picks on the board. Jalen Ramsey, Joey Bosa, and whoever your
Tunsil.
Other and maybe Tunsil,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, well, you know Dallas isn't taking Tunsil. You know Dallas isn't going that way. San Diego could.
They could, right. They yeah. absolutely could. I mean, but one of those guys.
But if San Diego takes Tunsil, now you're looking at those other two.
You're
one of
those
two
defensive
guys being
players.
Available.
Right.
If quarterback goes 1-2.
Right. And, I mean, look, you know, Dallas, would Dallas go Joey Bosa? Maybe they would. They just spent a lot of draft capital on defensive line. We don't know if they want Greg Hardy coming back or not this year. I don't know why you would, but, you know, Dallas doesn't seem to care about off-the-field issues as long as you can produce on the field. He's got a proven track record, although wasn't fantastic this year. Anyway, moving on from that, let us go to Luigi on the south side. Hello, Luigi. How are you?
Hey, good morning, fellas. So I'm going to be the first to admit I drank the losing record playoff Kool-Aid. It was a lot of fun there at the end of the season to still be in it, but putting that aside, my thoughts at the end of this season, I think, are wrapped up in one thought. Other than the New England game in the last couple of weeks, I was engaged in this team for 60 minutes of football, and that has not been the case since probably, what, 09? And to me, I'm satisfied. I'm going to watch them again next year. I'm going to watch them in the off season. Saw improvement. We got a lot of young guys contributing. We still got our problems. I think Gus and Caldwell are doing what they need to do, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the next offseason brings us.
Well, that's great. Look, I'm not trying to tamp down anybody who has that kind of opinion. I hope there are 75,000 like-minded people out there. Honestly, I mean, I think that's fantastic. Certainly, Tony, when you get away from the open wound that is yesterday's performance, you can look and say, yeah, there were reasons to be excited, and they were more competitive. Now, there's also a group of fans that says, that's ridiculous. How can you be satisfied with being, quote-unquote, competitive? You're 5-11. You're not competitive. You're 5-11. That's fine, too. If you want that point of view, I'm not going to try to rain on Luigi's parade. If
no.
you took great satisfaction out of the improvements that you saw and are excited for the future, more power to you, man. I hope there are a lot of other people out there. And I think there are reasons to be excited, but I'm trying to be a realist. I want to be excited, but at the same time, I've got to recognize, Tony, they've won 4, 3, and 5 games under the Caldwell-Bradley regime so far. And this defense is nowhere closer to stopping people than they were 3 years ago. And is the offense much improved? Absolutely it is. The passing game is. The running game? Not yet. There's still a lot of holes on this football team.
The lasting image for me of the 2015 season, and I'm looking forward to hearing Boselli talk about the tape tonight and getting the opportunity to talk to Loggeman tomorrow here on Jaguars Today. The end of the first half, when Houston is facing that 3rd and long and has no timeouts, and everybody that has watched football for more than a month knows exactly what Houston is about to try to do. They're going to try to hit a sideline route because they can't throw anything inbounds, basically try to get 10 to 12 yards. If they can get more than that, they will, but they're going to try to get 10 to 12 yards, and your defensive coordinator does the right thing. Your defensive coordinator not only does the right thing, your defensive coordinator plays a high-low coverage on DeAndre Hopkins with Aaron Colvin and Devon House. Who the heck else would you want covering DeAndre Hopkins in that situation than Colvin and House? And Colvin simply doesn't get in position on the play. And I don't put that on Babich. I don't put that on Bradley. I put that on Colvin. He has to understand the game situation and where he needs to be on that particular play. That's the picture of 2015 to me. That it's not just, and there are coaching problems. There are issues with the scheme on this defense. But even when they got it right, your best players were letting you down at times this year, and they have to be better. It has to pick up across the board for this football
team.
How right.
do you do that? If you don't change your coaching staff, if they're hearing the same message over and over, I don't know.
Message to some degree has to change. And I think you felt that at the end of the year, that there was this degree of change with Gus Bradley, where you heard the comments after the New Orleans games where he said, look, if guys aren't making plays, we got to find somebody else. He said it. He said, if guys aren't making plays, we got to find somebody else. And I think that is pointing to this offseason and some of the things that they're going to have to figure out.
Right. I understand what you're saying, too. But then I'd counterpoint and say, okay, well, you consider Aaron Colvin one of your young building block players. If he's making
He has to know.
Right. Right.
But, and I don't think a coach needs to have to tell Aaron Colvin, you have to be underneath this route on the sideline. There are 14 seconds left. They got no timeouts. He needs to know that.
I get that. My point being, if Aaron Colvin is seen as one of your young, up-and-coming building block players, but he's also, you're putting him in the category of, this is a guy who, if he's not getting it done, needs to be replaced. There are a lot of people that need replacing, right? And Gus Bradley needs to show significant improvement, according to the owner of this football team. Is he capable? Is his team capable of showing enough improvement in the one loss record? Because to me, that's where it needs to matter. Not in, hey, we feel good. And it's great if you're a fan and you say, hey, I was engaged for 60 minutes. But that's not in the bottom line. Shad Khan goes to the owners' meetings. He doesn't brag about, hey, my fans are engaged for 60 minutes. They're laughing if that's what you're saying.
Sure.
You want to say my team is a double-digit win team, and they will be for the foreseeable future, and they're a perennial contender and a challenger. That's the level you need to get to. And if Gus, with all these people, we can start going through what's really set on this team and what's not really set and how much change needs to occur in one offseason after they've already built for 3 years, and they still need to add or change this much, especially if you're going back now and questioning some of the guys you thought were going to be part of the answer and part of your long-term core. Good luck getting that significant improvement enough to feel good about your job security next year. That's all I'm saying. All right, 641-1010. If you want to get in, you know the number. More from Blake and Gus coming up in just a moment here, and we'll look at the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you who's the biggest positive surprise and the biggest disappointment, who let you down the most this year in 2015 for your Jacksonville Jaguars. With Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I don't know, maybe. Right now it's pretty pointless, but I think it's definitely something that's a cool stat to have. I think anytime you're able to, personal or team-wise, break statistical records, I think it's an accomplishment.
As Blake Bortles asked after the game yesterday if he'll be able to appreciate the passing records later on in the offseason after you get a little distance from it. Look, in the end, Blake's going to go down with the most passing yards in a Jaguars single season, most touchdowns in a single season. Those are records to be proud of, right? And I understand the context. You're not looking to celebrate or pat yourself on the back coming off that performance yesterday or the overall season being 5-11 for the Jags. So I think he takes the right approach, Tony. I'd have no problem if at some point in the privacy of his own abode, Blake Bortles sits back and goes, damn, you know what? All things considered, yeah, I've got a lot of work to do. But that's a pretty good second year in the National Football League because overall it was. Let's not lose the forest for the trees here. Blake Bortles has issues that he needs to correct. I'm sure he'll tell you that. Led the league in interceptions this year, not good. Had too many turnovers, period, sack fumbles, you name it. Okay, telegraphing of passes, bad decision-making, all these things. He's a second-year quarterback who exceeded my expectations this year. In fact, when we get to the fan feedback spotlight, he might be, despite the fact that I thought he'd be good, I didn't think he'd be this good. He may be the biggest positive surprise for me here in his second year. Let's get a little bit more from Blake and Gus right now. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars Today. Blake asked how much yesterday's performance stings as a way to end the season.
It's tough. Nobody wants to end the year on a note like that. I guess the good thing is we got a lot of time to look at it and figure out how to fix it and do different things. So, I think this is definitely tough. You never want to play a game like that. But, I think it's important that we don't forget, the things that we did well this year. I think there were a lot of strides made, and I think there's still a lot of room to go. Obviously didn't finish games the way we wanted to, but I think there were some good things done throughout the year. And now we'll get a chance to reflect on that and, figure out how to fix different things and make adjustments and how to continue to do the things we did well.
Blake Bortles also asked after the loss yesterday if it was a reminder of just how far they've come.
I don't think so. I think, because I think we played them earlier in the year and played pretty well. I played poorly, but, as a team, we played pretty well and we moved the ball. I think this was just one of those games. They played well and we didn't. There's not really a whole lot of things to say other than, they pretty much flat out beat us in every phase of the game. I thought our defense did a good job and gave us some opportunities. We just couldn't get anything rolling really in any phase of offense. So it's tough.
Gus Bradley asked after the game as well if he felt like yesterday was the team's worst performance of the season.
I don't know all the stats. I know they had quite a few yards. I think there was times off their offense. You know, we got some third down stops. We had some opportunities. Like I said, we had a chance to go in there and keep it a one possession game. You know, defensively, I think the points, you know, they did a good job keeping the points down as much as we could to give us a shot. So that part I was pleased about, but, you know, overall, what do you say? You know, they, you know, we fumbled the ball. We had three fumbles. I think they got two of them and the four interceptions and a couple of red zone opportunities they had on offense. We didn't get stops.
Yeah. Gus is in a position, no matter what he says to that, it's probably not going to be a good answer, you know, and as we've seen, anything you say in the post game will resonate, and look, they're your words, so you choose them carefully, but
yeah.
Tony, I don't think it matters. Was it the worst, the second worst, the third worst? It was among the very worst that they had for sure. And it's just a matter of how you judge one versus the other. Did they give up the most points? No. You know, was it the largest margin of defeat? No. But at the same time, you can say, hey, you're this far along in the season. You had a chance to go out on a positive note. Hopefully at least try to spoil the other team's playoff chances. And if not, spoil them because they needed so many things to go against them. Not let them clinch it versus you. And it didn't happen. So certainly the fact that it's among the worst is bad enough. Whether it's the absolute worst of the season, I think is pretty irrelevant.
It felt too much like a game from the last couple of years where Houston never got pushed to have to do anything.
No.
I mean, that's what it felt. It felt like one of those games where they had a 2-touchdown lead, and that's comfortable because that's all they needed at that point was a 2-touchdown lead, and they expanded it out to 30-6 before everything was said and done. One last comment here from head coach Gus Bradley. He was asked if the last few weeks, New Orleans and Houston diminished the entire season.
I'm not going to take away some of the things we did, like say, for example, offensively. There's a lot of good things that took place. I think this, you know, against Houston, going up against them and seeing some of the things that they do, I think, you know, you'd see a revised game plan, you know, what we need to do now and how we need to attack it. And so, you know, those things can happen within a game. So, you know, just because of this game, I don't want to take away some of the things that we've done well. But we do have some work to do now. We do have some work to do.
Well, that if it doesn't, you know, and these games don't define you next off season or this off season and next year, I don't want to hear any more then about how week 17 will give you a springboard into the off season. It either works both ways or it doesn't work. So if you had won that game tremendously, they would have been talking about how this is, you know, indicative of the team that we have and this is what well, they showed you the team that they have yesterday. That's part of the story. And you can say, well, that's not who we really are. Well, 5-11 is who you are. So along the way, you had some very high points, absolutely. You had some very low points, absolutely. You had a lot more low than you had high this year.
That's spin zone. It's politics.
That's what it is. You know, we're here to filter that a little bit. And with that, the fan feedback spotlight today, Tony, first of the year, asking folks who was the biggest positive surprise and their biggest disappointment for the Jaguars in 2015.
Here's what we got from Daniel. Surprise, Allen Robinson. I didn't know he was elite good. And disappointment, Jonathan Cyprian. From Brian, biggest surprise, how quickly the offense got going. Biggest disappointment, not firing Gus Bradley. From Eric, surprise was Hearn's continued top play, and biggest disappointment was Cyprian's poor play. For Isaiah, surprise was Telvin Smith. Disappointment was Marquise Lee. From Andy, positive, Bortles' meteoric rise. Negative, 2013 draft class seems none of them improve. From Ocho Fisho, biggest positive, Allen Robinson. Biggest disappointment, failure to capitalize on weak divisions, similar to Washington. From Irish Jaguar, positive offense, negative defense. From Brian, positive, the growth of A-Rob and Hearns. Negative, the offensive line, second-year wide receivers over 1,000 yards is amazing. From Jarrell, disappointment, 2013 draft class, surprise, Allen Brothers, thunder and lightning coming soon. From Die Hard Jag, A-Rob is his surprise. Knew he was good. Couldn't have imagined that, though. And disappointment was Toby Gerhart, one of the highest paid running backs in the NFL. From Alvaro, no positive, all disappointment. How can they be so bad?
Alvaro. A couple on,
come on,
Facebook,
man.
Here, Tony.
There's some positives on this football team.
There are. Maurice said Bortles was by far the biggest improvement. The Leo spot was the biggest disappointment. And he listed some honorable mentions in there, but we got to move along. Miguel said, biggest surprise, Blake Bortles. He's our guy. He's our franchise quarterback. Biggest disappointment, Zane Beatles. Joshua Lee writes, at biggest surprise, Blake Bortles. I expected progress, but not franchise record-breaking progress. Biggest disappointment, the entire defense struggled. I just can't pick one player to single out, although Telvin Smith and Jared Odrick, he thinks, stood out as our only bright spots. Maybe Posluszny and House had his ups and downs. Cass Bridges said the offense was definitely surprised. The defense was a complete dumpster fire on a sinking ship, but she added, go Jags. And then Daniel said, I'm going to speak just to the biggest disappointment, which is Cyprian. He has been hyped way too long, and he's average at best. His strength is supposed to be tackling and helping in run defense, and he's not a solid tackler. He was brought in. This was brought to high-def light yesterday when he was one-on-one with Alfred Blue, and he got run over with ease. His pursuit angles are poor, and he doesn't defend the pass well at all. Hashtag Jaguars today. For me, Blake is the biggest surprise. Look, Allen Robinson exceeded my expectations greatly as well, but, Tony, I remember clearly talking about this thinking, boy, if they could flip around the touchdown-to-interception ratio and maybe, you know, get it up to around 20 and go, say, 20 and 15 even, you know, a couple fewer interceptions, and considering you're playing 16 games instead of 13, and bump up those touchdowns from 11 to, and maybe add 10 to them, and he blew that mark out of the water. Now, you could talk about style of play because they threw the ball so much, but, you know, you and I could go out there and throw it 100,000 times, and it's not going to matter. You got to have the talent and the ability to make those plays when given the opportunity. He made them. He made too many negative plays as well. But overall, you know, your chance to lead the league in touchdown passes on the final day of the season, and shockingly to me, didn't throw one. You could have led the league in touchdown passes. Pretty big positive surprise in my book. And defensively, boy, I mean, the entirety of the defense, I thought the defense would be solid, and then it kind of just crumbled as the year went along. They were good against the run for about half a year, and then that went away a little bit in the second half of the season as well. They couldn't rush the passer all season long. They're definitely, look, I'll be honest with you, Julius Thomas, not a major disappointment. I expected more out of Julius Thomas, and I expect he will deliver more next year. I understand the circumstances of him starting the year injured, but there were too many games, whether it was him or the scheme or what, that you've got a Pro Bowl performer at tight end. You got to utilize him more. Yesterday was one of those examples, I thought. For you, biggest surprise, positive surprise, and disappointment?
It really is the offense is the biggest surprise. I mean, we talked about it all offseason last year. They were a team that was worse than the league in scoring offense, and they moved, I think they wound up 14th or something like that this year. They improved by 8 to 9 points a game in one season, which is crazy. I mean, honestly, and I know O'Halloran said he's going to do the homework on this to see just how many teams have had that kind of improvement from one year to the next, but that's a massive improvement on that side of the ball, and that points to Bortles and A-Rob and Hearns and all those guys getting it done, and Olsen as well. The biggest disappointment, I think Sip is probably the guy that I circle with it, but it's this defense allowed 28 points a game. 28.
Way too many.
They're allowing a touchdown a quarter all year long. And for a team that picked it up offensively the way that this Jaguars team did, and I go back to 2014, and it's something that I mentioned last week, but maybe 2014 the defense was a bit more of a mirage because teams just weren't getting pushed by this offense to have to do anything.
Yeah.
They didn't have to score. And I think this year they felt like they needed to. You know, I think teams felt like they needed to score because Jacksonville's going to score 20 to 25 points on a weekly basis. So we got to score 28, and they could. When teams needed to, they could score in that kind of range. So it's a disappointing that year three with Gus Bradley, they're not any better there. But the biggest would be the 2013 draft class because it's just the idea that they have to go back and start fixing things that they were picking then. In the first three rounds, which they do. They may have to hit all three positions this offseason. Left tackle, strong safety, corner.
Whether they add it or maybe like a guy like James Sample or Josh Wells pushes, they still have to resolve those, at least to our satisfaction, right? Maybe in their eyes they don't.
Well, I think corner, they would admit that corner is something that they're going to have to address this offseason. I don't know how much they're going to directly address free safety or left or strong safety or left tackle. But it certainly feels like both those positions need somebody to push those guys.
All right, final two thoughts here as we get ready to turn you over to XL Primetime. Tyler Passey's tweets along to me. One from Phil Savage, who runs the Senior Bowl. He said, just guessing, this is what he tweeted last night, our two NFL coaching staffs will likely be from these four teams, the Chargers, the Cowboys, the Jaguars, and the Ravens. So according to Phil Savage, you got about a 50-50 chance to be back coaching the Senior Bowl, unfortunately, or fortunately. And for Mary Kay Cabot, who covers the Browns for the Plain Dealer in Cleveland, asked Justin Gilbert, who we referenced before, he admitted last year he missed a ton of meetings. Why, she asked. I'm a hard sleeper. Nothing deeper than that? No. Okay. Hard sleeper, Justin Gilbert. There you have it. At least you don't have him to worry about. You got your own issues. For Fat Tony, for John Osier, for Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey wrapping up this Monday's Jaguars Today. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Money, North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories. Check them out online at gunsforjacks.com. Coming up next, XL Primetime on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flip.
Woo! That's great job!